blanket and some sunblock. It's time for lying on the beach on camera. Lois and Steve.
Welcome to another edition of Lying on the Beach on Camera. I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess.
And our engineer is
David Nieves.
Hey, David. And our guest today is Maurice de Hun. And he is a Dutch pollster and entrepreneur. He's the founder of the Steve Jobs School, which is an elementary school that gives students an iPad and encourages individualized learning. And currently, Maurice uses data analysis and geography to study COVID-19. And as we're in this pandemic and all very concerned about it, we want to get his insights into this whole COVID-19 situation. So Maurice, thank you for joining us, Lying on the Beach. I love the beach you have behind you. It's beautiful. And I have to
Dutch beach, by the way.
Oh, see, yeah, and mine's a Miami beach, so we're all sticking to our home beaches. I wanted to ask, so you've been studying geography and data analysis, and looking at that and the virus, what have you learned? What insights can you take from that you think might help the rest of us who are stuck here in this pandemic?
Yeah, what I saw from day one, because my background is a geographer, was that there was at the outburst in Wuhan and Korea, Seattle and Italy and Madrid, it was all in the same climate. That was winter, the degrees were around 40 to 50 degrees Fahrenheit, and it was also a very dry, no humid air. And for example, in the northern part of Italy, there was a lot happening. The southern part of Italy, there was nothing happening. And so apparently there was and is a connection between the weather and the way the virus is going over the world. And I knew already beginning of March, because of the weather in Italy, that New York had the worst weather possible for the virus. And it happened, I said, about 10th of March, that New York would become the second Bergamo because of the weather in New York, who was almost the same temperature and humidity. And from that moment on, I wrote a lot of blogs in the Netherlands. I became basically a kind of criticaster of the Dutch CDC, because the Dutch CDC is, like also in the United States, always said you get infected because of a droplet coming out of your mouth and entering the mouth or nose of somebody else. Mm-hmm. But basically, from day one, I was convinced, because of what I read and the studies, that the way the virus is going is through the air, and people are inhaling the virus into their lungs, and that's the way the virus is going. And because of the kind of weather, for example, if the weather in the summer in the European countries like ours, then we don't have influenza, we don't have COVID-19. Currently, the weather is becoming worse, and now we start getting the virus back. And if you look, for example, to Australia, Melbourne, that was winter, and there it happened. It didn't happen in the summer in Australia, and also not in Sydney, but in Melbourne, where the weather was not okay, there you could see that the virus is going around. So basically, what my and more you can see also in the United States, that the aerosols flying through the air is a much more important way of transmission of the virus than the way the WHO and the CDC says that it's going by droplets.
So basically, what is the difference? Because a droplet could go through the air.
No, if you have it's kind of bigger droplet. A bigger droplet goes maybe for 2-3 feet from your mouth and going down to the floor. And the only way, according to them, that you would be infected if that droplet is coming into your nose or mouth. But the droplet is too heavy to go through the air. But there are very micro droplets who are so small that under specific conditions, especially indoor, no good ventilation, then the virus is going through the air, stays in the air. And if you are in that room long enough to inhale enough of that virus, the virus goes directly in your lungs, and there you can do much more the virus than coming into your nose, because your nose is also a kind of defense against viruses.
Maurice, so, is it more about the behavior of people in bad weather? We stay inside more, or is it more about the temperature itself? I mean, I'm not sure I'm following. Which is it, our behavior or the environmental behavior that's affecting the virus, you think?
No, because influenza has a kind of same strategy also, and there they couldn't find exactly the right explanation. What you just said, is it our behavior because it's cold, we're going inside? But more and more people are convinced, because if it is winter, or then you know that the air is very dry inside the house, because outside the temperature is much lower. And even if there's a lot of water, if the temperature goes up, the percentage of water is going down. And if the humidity is lower than 40%, then the virus can stay in the air, floating in the air a long time. If the humidity goes up, the virus, it cannot float a long time. So it's a combination, because you are more inside. But for example, in the Netherlands, in summertime, our windows are open, the doors are open, and you have a lot of ventilation and natural ventilation, and that takes care that the virus, even if it's floating, it's going away because of the air movement. In the winter time, especially in cold places, we are inside houses and we close the windows, and then either if there is no heating system in your house, or there is a heating system in your house, but still the heating doesn't bring the right fresh air in. So the virus can stay a long time in the air. And that's the reason why, for example, people get infected, because if you inhale it a lot. And also in nursing homes, we know everywhere in the world, you see a lot of things happening in nursing homes. And for the first place, of course, they are weaker, older people. But secondly, most of those houses don't have fresh air from the outside, but have an internal ventilation. And you can see, if you see a situation somewhere in a nursing home or somewhere else where a lot of people are infected at the same time, it's not because somebody is talking a lot and bring it to your nose, the droplet, no. Then it goes through the air, and almost everybody is inhaling it, and most of them becoming ill.
So what is your recommendation? People should wear masks or not wear masks?
Inside areas where there are strange people, inside the inside areas, not inside your house, but inside areas where you meet strange people, in that region, there are a lot of people who are infected. If almost nobody is infected, masks are no use, because you don't meet somebody who can infect you. But if there are a lot of people, or a reasonable lot of people, then masks have two positive effects. And there's a lot of studies who say different things, but I'm convinced, because of the studies I read, and I read a lot. First of all, if you have mask to inhale the virus, you limit the inhalation a little bit. That's called the viral dose. And a viral dose means it's not like when one piece of virus comes into your lungs, then you become ill. No, it has to be a specific amount, and it depends on your age, how much amount that should be before you become ill. But if you have a mask, then you get less virus inside. So gives you a kind of defense. And the second part of the defense is that you exhale also less virus. So and that combination means that if you wear masks in those areas, it's safer for yourself, a little bit safer for yourself, and also a little bit safer for the other people.
What about outside?
Outside is almost completely safe.
So you don't have to wear a mask?
No. There's only one possible situation what could be dangerous. If you are talking with each other face to face for a longer time, then you also have aerosols coming out of your mouth. And normally they fly around and so on. But if it's a long time, then you also can start to inhale it. If you wear a mask outside for other reasons, there is some professor who said, if you wear a mask outside to defend yourself against COVID-19, you also have to wear a helmet, because the chance that you get a branch of a tree on your head is bigger than you get COVID-19 in your lungs.
So wait a minute. So everyone is telling us, the Americans, that outside dining is safe. So we walk through the restaurant or through the streets with a mask on. Then once we sit down, this could be six people at a table and we all take our masks off. So you're saying that that's dangerous?
No.
No, I said outside basically is safe. The only situation is, why is it safe? Because it's not safe if you inhale a lot of virus.
Right.
If you're outside, the possibility to inhale a lot of virus is very limited, because the air flows, there is a heat difference, so the air goes up and so on. The only danger situation is there is not a lot of wind, mainly if it's dark, not in the so not in daytime, and you sit close to each other face to face and talk with each other face to face for half an hour, and the distance between each of you is maybe 3 feet or so, then you have the risk to inhale some of those aerosols. So that's, in my opinion, the only real dangerous possible situation outside. But wearing mask outside for other in other occasions has no use whatsoever.
So that's exactly what I was asking you. We are being told that we could go outside and dine, and once you sit down, you don't have to wear your mask. So if I went out with you, you'd be less than 3 feet away from me, you know, if we weren't conscious about social distancing, and the risk would be greater to catch the virus if you had it.
Yeah, especially if there is not a lot of wind, if it's evening dark, it's in daytime, the sun also plays a big role to kill the virus with UV light.
But to recap, what he did say before that is your risk is much greater if you're indoor dining. Indoor dining, the air is being recirculated and everybody's sharing everybody's air, and that's the highest risk. Then the next level down would be outdoor dining. The risk is lower. And then, of course, outside with a mask, you know, then you're even more safe. But you know, each time you go up the ladder, you increase your risk. So yeah, there's certainly more risk in being outdoor dining than there's certainly more risk in indoor dining than outdoor dining. But one question I wanted to ask you, Maurice, was you mentioned the humidity in the air. Wintertime in cold climates, the humidity is down to zero. Wouldn't that make it outdoors very, very safe when it's cold outside, or not necessarily?
If it's very cold outside, by the way, if it's below 32 or 35, it's very safe, because the virus cannot survive in cold weather. So for example, if you saw the development in the United States, Chicago started much later, at least 3-4 weeks later, because it was cold before 15th of March. Then the weather in New York was above zero, freezing.
32, yeah.
35, 40 and dry, but Chicago was still 30 or 20 to 25. And you can also see in the northern countries, it only start for us, or Canada, it started only later because there it was cold. On the other hand, in the southern states, like Florida, then you don't have the winter who is so dry that you have the virus there. And you can see it there are several areas in the United States. The southern states got it during their summer and not during the winter of the other parts of the country.
So wait a minute, let me get this straight again. So in the winter in Miami, it is not as dangerous as the cold weather, or just the opposite?
The winter in Miami is, in my opinion, completely safe. The only problem if there are still people who come from the outside or still there who are still infectious, and you are going to in a restaurant where everything is closed, there is only recirculating the air, then you have some risk. But I'm sure that when it's winter, December or January, almost no risk in Florida.
So Maurice, how does an obese guy that doesn't eat well, that has high blood pressure, that probably has high cholesterol, who is 72 years old, or no, 74 years old, how does he get the virus and then recuperate so quickly?
Because it's all about the virus dose. The viral dose is most important. Let's take a number that you need to become real ill, you have to inhale 1,000 parts of the virus, let's say. And if you are older or weaker, you can become already very ill after 500. But if you only inhaled, for example, this guy, 200 parts, then some things can happen. First of all, maybe 200 parts are even that you don't notice even that you were infected,
right,
and that you have no symptoms whatsoever. Then, for example, with 500 pieces of virus, you become a kind of ill, but not terrible ill. Above 1,000, he has big risk even to die. So they call it the viral dose.
So even though he's 74 years old, he still, it's a matter of the dose, about how sick he gets.
Yeah, because there are also, remember, if you can see what happened, it happened in the United States, but in England and in China, that you had even doctors below, let's say, 30 years old, they became very ill and died because the dose was enormous for them. But mostly, right. And again, it's also your age, how older you are, how less the dose can be, how lower the dose could become very ill. But it's very strange even that you could say, if a lot of people got only a limited dose, that could be the best defense for a population, because then they become not ill or not very ill, and they are immune. So, and that's maybe what happened in Sweden, for example.
Right. So we just have 5 minutes left, Steve, so let's ask our last questions.
I mean, I think what's most interesting also is that, that indoor dining, if you open a window or you open a door, that little change makes a dramatic difference on indoor dining. Is that correct? Just by opening, being inside, but now you've opened one window, it's now a safer place, or not necessarily?
No, one window is not enough, because then you don't have movement of air. You need to have two windows across of each other.
And there is cross ventilation, yeah.
Yeah, and right. There's a very easy instrument, I will get it here, to measure if the air is fresh enough, and that's a CO2 meter. I show it now. No, I can show
there you
it.
Go, yeah. Right, right.
And I even give it to my daughter when she goes to school, and if the level is above 1,200, then you know there's not enough fresh air. If it's below, let's say, 1,000, you know that there is enough fresh air. And that's the way you can see if there's fresh air.
Where'd you get that gadget from?
There's a lot of shops, but they're sold out.
Amazon.
Steve, yeah. Get us that gadget. We'll walk around with it. I walk around and
No, but interesting. What happened, because I have it with me, and it gives every minute a new measurement. And let's say after 3 days, I even don't need it, I can smell it or feel it, what the level is.
Trust me, after this meeting, Steve is going to run out and get that gadget.
I ordered it already. I just ordered it.
And it also has
answer the question. I ordered it, so it's done.
And there's also an
Maurice, we have 3 minutes. I have to ask you. Joe Stone Crab, which you know, that famous restaurant right where I live, just sent out a letter saying that they're going to be completely antiseptic, sanitized and everything, and they ultraviolet raised the restaurant. So according to what you're saying, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. UV light is very important. That's also a way to kill the virus. So there's purifiers, air purifiers, who really get the virus out of the air. But the ventilation is very important. If you have that, is it okay? If there's not enough ventilation, there are several purifiers who get the virus out of the air, so people inside don't inhale the virus, and that's very important.
Okay, Steve, you better wrap it up. We got 2:21.
Maurice, that was great information. It was a breath of fresh air to get that information from you. Thank you very much. And once again, I'm Steve Greenberg with
Lois Whitman Hess,
and our engineer
David Nieves.
And our guest has been Maurice DeHaan, and thank you very much. And we have all been lying on the beach on camera. Take care, everybody.
Bye-bye.